Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Dr. Anita Grigoriadis. Anita works in breast cancer research at King's College London. We'll be talking about her work and how it benefits breast cancer patients, as well as what it's like to be a woman in STEM. Anita, thank you for joining me.
Hi Em, thanks very much for this invitation and I'm really glad to participate today.
To start with, Anita, would you mind just telling me a little bit about your role, how long you've been working in your field, and what initially got you interested in cancer research?
Okay, so I'm the non-clinical deputy of Breast Cancer Now unit at King's College London. I lead the Cancer Bioinformatics group in the School of Cancer and Pharmaceutical Sciences. And I have been working in this field of cancer actually since my master's degree. And as you can hear, I'm from Vienna, from Austria. So I started at the Institute of Molecular Pathology in Vienna. And already there, I was working on cancer of the brain. And then I moved to London to do my PhD at the Ludwig Institute for Cancer Research. And here really I explored how cells grow and how they stop growing, which is fundamental for cancer. Mm. And yeah, and then I actually, you know, I had a break and I became intrigued by the growing impact of computer science in biomedical science. And I decided to learn programming at home. Then I did a master in systems biology at the Birkbeck College at UCL. And really, we were one of the first breast cancer bioinformaticians that then started to use informatics to study biological data analysis, which is very complex.
Amazing. That sounds, yes, as you say, very complex to sort of be an expert in, you know, not only the biological side of things, but then to just go ahead and teach yourself programming. That sounds fascinating. Are you able to sort of dig into that, the bioinformatics a little bit more? Can you tell me what that entails?
So yeah, so we and I'm talking here, we as computational scientists, we sit the whole day in front of our computers, mm-hmm. and we work with data that our wet lab scientists or clinicians produce, now with machines that produce a lot of data. So that's what we call big data. Mm-hmm. And I work with letters and numbers. And what I try to identify is patterns in these letters and numbers. And you need to think biology always consists of patterns. So if you look at a snowflake or how the sand is formed when there is wind blowing over it. And that's in a way what we try to find in molecules that are in our cells. And a human body has 3 trillion cells, no matter if you're small or large. And yeah, so what really my focus is to find patterns that I can then relate, maybe how a cancer develops, how a patient may respond to treatment. And this information I would give back to biologists that work in the lab or clinicians to inform them maybe more what the cancer is that this patient has.
Mm. That's fascinating. So this must be a fairly new type of cancer research, I guess, then looking for correlation in big data. And these things probably wouldn't have been possible, I don't know, 10 years ago even. So this must be a fairly new field, right?
Yeah, so I always actually quote Sidney Brenner, a Nobel laureate, who said, really, science progresses first with technology, then with ideas, because you know, we were only able to do this kind of experiments with the technology that evolved 20 years ago. So with these new machines that produce this large data, big data, where you need now computers to analyze them. Yeah. So at the time when I did my PhD, these methods were not there yet, and we could still do many analyses, you know, with Excel sheets or on a piece of paper. Mm. Nowadays, the data that's coming from our clinics or in our labs, you know, we really do need computers that are more and more powerful.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's fascinating. I mean, it must be so exciting kind of working with these new things day to day. I mean, maybe it's not as exciting for you because it is just your day job. But for me, this sounds
incredible. You know, still amazing what one can find out and how little we still know.
Absolutely. And I wonder if you could, touching on that a bit, would you mind telling me a little bit about the research that you're currently working on and how you hope that it will benefit breast cancer patients?
Sure. So my team is a mixture of computer and wet lab scientists. So we combine biology, mathematics, and computer programming. And as I said, we try to identify patterns that are either giving us a hint how this cancer has developed and will further develop, and maybe if a patient will develop secondary cancers, and how the patient may respond to a treatment. So we are aiming to identify markers with which we could select patients who will benefit most from therapies. And lately in breast cancer, a new areas of therapies have emerged that intervene with the immune system of the patient. So we are now keen to identify markers specifically for these kind of therapies.
Fantastic. And are there any particular types of cancer that you're focusing on?
Yeah, so over the last 15 years, my focus was on triple negative breast cancer. These are cancers, these are very aggressive cancers, quite often in very young patients. Mm. And unfortunately, these patients may develop secondary cancers very quickly. So they're really high risk patients. And currently, you know, we have we're still limited with the kind of therapies that we have. So there's a real urgent need to understand more and characterize these cancers, the patients, and see what we can find, and do we identify new avenues with which we can treat these patients.
Of course. It's really helpful hearing you sort of give that breakdown of exactly where you're focusing, because I think a lot of the time when people are supporting Breast Cancer Now or other charities that are involved in research, it's such a vast topic, isn't it, breast cancer research, that people are never quite sure exactly what's being prioritized, what's being focused on. But to hear, you know, someone who is actually involved in this speaking about it, it's so helpful. And it gives a real insight into the goings on of what goes on behind the closed doors of charities that we don't often see at the forefront is people like yourself and the work that you're doing. And could you give any examples of new research that you've been involved with recently?
Yes. So over the recent years, I really became fascinated of the influence of lymph nodes in breast cancer. So lymph nodes are little bean-shaped organs, they help us to sense and attack foreign invaders like viruses or cancer cells that do not belong in a healthy body. So you may notice that your lymph nodes swell when you have a cold. In our bodies, we have around 500 to 600 lymph nodes, and my group focuses on lymph nodes that are under the arm, so they are close to the breast cancer. And by getting a better understanding how these small immune organs react to the presence of this breast cancer, we hope to get a perspective of the wider immune responses in these patients. Mm-hmm. So how they respond to treatment, and you know, since these lymph nodes are also locations where the breast cancer sometimes goes to and grows, we want to understand what is happening in these immune organs, and maybe can we intervene, or can we boost the immune system so that there may be a better response against the cancer.
And you say that you're sort of more focused on that data side of things. Mm-hmm. And then you work with a team who presumably will then sort of carry out research with patients and sort of see how your recommendations or your findings are then affecting treatments that they can then pass on to patients. Is how long does that process take of kind of you'll find a pattern that you want to identify, and then you'll take it to other researchers who might try and develop treatments? And I imagine there's a lot of back and forth there. So how long would it take between you deciding that you want to look into certain lymph nodes, for instance, you want to investigate this certain thing, and then that becoming a treatment that's available to people? I don't know if that's too vague a question, if that's something that you can answer, but I imagine it's quite a long process.
Yes, it is. And, you know, you need many steps and, you know, we need to be rigorous. Yeah. So I think in a world, in a very fast, you know, we're living in a fast paced world, yeah, which we have seen, in, especially in these last 2 years, you know, where many things have become visible through social media. But, you know, we really shouldn't forget, we need to be rigorous as researchers. And so therefore, you know, there will be many steps that we will need to have, we will need to take to evaluate that our findings are generalizable. So it's not happening in one lab or in one institute or in one hospital. We will need, you know, statistician involved, clinician, you know, there are many, many people involved. And I think nowadays it is really a multidisciplinary research that we all do. So, you know, we need to be able to explain our science to researchers in other disciplines. And that's really key to move things forward efficiently, quickly, and so that we can, you know, that it can benefit the patient eventually.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's more about that, yeah, that cross team collaboration and working together. And I hope it's okay to touch on this now. Of I know that in recent years there's been a bit more of a focus on trying to get women involved in STEM industries, such as scientific research. And did you find that there were any barriers that you personally had to overcome as a woman in your field?
Well, so I started probably not 20 years ago. I started in computer science at the time when computer science wasn't very big in translational research. So there were not many men and women in this field. So I don't think there were really barriers specifically for women. But however, there were also not very many women in general in science, and especially women maybe like myself that decided to take a career break. So I stayed at home to be with my daughters for 5 years, and then I went back only part-time for another 5 years. Luckily, and I think I was very fortunate, I had always great mentors, and these mentors were men. One of them was my PhD supervisor, Professor Pamchit Chat, who gave me the opportunity to return to science after my maternity leave. And that followed on then going to Breast Cancer Now, where Professor Alan Ashworth and then Professor Andrew Dutt really gave me the opportunity to, you know, expand in my research and to set up my own independent research. So I think as I said, I was very fortunate and very lucky, and I'm very thankful, you know, for my mentors.
Well, it's brilliant to hear. And in that time that you've been in the field then, do you think that, you know, any barriers that there may have been for other people, do you think that those are improving today?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the activities that are done to try to engage women, girls early on into science, into computational science is really fantastic. And, you know, it's great that it's there, but we still need to do more. There's still a long way to go. We know that many of the high up positions are still filled mostly by men, so which is still a class ceiling that still is a challenge to break into. Maybe especially in mathematics, you know, we need to show our girls that this is interesting, and you know, everybody can do maths. So I think there's still a little bit more to be done, but we are on an upward trajectory, definitely.
I think especially hearing you talking about the data part of your work, I think when we think of breast cancer research, we might think of just people looking through microscopes all the time, and we don't realize that there are many facets of research that people can get involved with, and whether that's people who are more inclined to that data-led mathematical way of thinking, that those people can also get involved in research as well. And talking more broadly about your role, is there anything that you would identify as being the most challenging part of your job?
Well, there are many, many challenges every day. They're different. But I think one of the challenges is to be heard in the way that one wants to be heard. So I think we all could get better in listening to each other without any biases. to accept that we come from different fields, different background. And so to take a step back and listening to the person across you who may want to have, who has something to say, I think this is really, for all of us, a challenge that we should, maybe tackle so that we can understand what we want to say. Mm-hmm. And, as I said before, as a cancer researcher, there is this pressure to move now very quickly, to get into therapeutic and commercial exploitation. And I do think the challenge remains that we should not lose sight of the scientific rigor and the precision that underpins all our discoveries, so that when we find something, we can move forward with confidence.
Of course. And again, that's something that we hear from people, especially breast cancer patients, of this kind of frustration with treatments, and maybe sometimes they take quite a long time to develop, and we sometimes think like, well, this money is going towards research, and what do we see from that? Where are the results? But as we've heard just from you giving a very brief insight into what you do, just sort of the amount of collaboration that's needed there, the amount of time, just collecting all that data and then being able to pore over it and actually look for patterns and find answers in there is not something that you can do quickly. It is something that, as you say, it needs a lot of effort and focus and concentration to make sure that you're getting things exactly right. And I imagine when you do things, you do get things right, and you do find those discoveries, that must be an amazing feeling. Would you say that is the most rewarding part of your job?
Yeah, I think, finding something new is always rewarding. Then, seeing that other people can validate what you find, that really then shows that this is, not only I found something, but, these ideas or this research, can be validated, which is really very, very important for us. So therefore, working, with many scientists, and not only in our hospitals or in our institutes, but nationally and internationally, has become really key. Mm. And, I'm the international lead for our school, this gives me the opportunities to collaborate with scientists around the world, to share ideas. And then, that really will lead to new exciting progress in this field. So I think that's really rewarding. For me, probably the most rewarding aspect is I'm very fortunate. I have an amazing team of postdocs and scientists, and all of us, we share this passion of translational science in breast cancer. So, when a student comes to me or a postdoc, and they found something they think is interesting, and we, we look over the data together, we carefully see that nothing went wrong, and, the data is as robust as it can be. This is really priceless to see their excitement in their eyes, and to be able, to give on this excitement of science to the next generation. Mm. So I'm the training lead for the CUK City of London Major Centre. I have lots of contacts with students and training and mentoring them and providing them with a solid footed to make their own decisions and their path into translational science. I think that's really very rewarding of my job.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. It's sort of, yes, you have your individual achievements as a scientist, but all the work that you're doing, all the work that your team are doing, it's almost kind of like you are building blocks that other people will be able to build further on later on in their careers and stuff. But you're really providing a foundation for so many people and so much future research. That must feel absolutely amazing. And it's amazing to get to hear you talking about it. And really exciting to know that these kinds of things are happening, and that, there is promise for future treatments and new things are happening all the time and being worked on, even if we don't always see them. So thank you so much for taking us through that, giving us a little brief snapshot into your work. And I wonder, is there anything else that you would like to mention at this time?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me. We are very enthusiastic, what we do, and we have, been doing this for a while, and we're looking forward to do this, and continue working on these questions. There are many things that still need to be solved, and it's truly an honor to be funded by Breast Cancer Now, and having this opportunity to explore ideas that we think may be beneficial for breast cancer patients.
Oh, thank you, Anita. That's fantastic. Thank you. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.